Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 86 of the What the Sheep podcast, where Alana and myself will be discussing, breaking down, and trying not to freak out over the very tragic episode we had last night of Critical Role Campaign 3, episode 34. Oof. Boy, was this one also a doozy. Two back-to-back bangers.
Yeah.
I would consider last week's episode like in the top 10 of like Critical Role episodes.
Yeah, I think just the way that combat worked, even though it wasn't necessarily like, you know, successful combat, it was good combat. It was good D&D.
It was very good. And then following up with this one, all of the tragedy that then unfurls from the consequence of the last episode definitely enhance just the entire emotional spectrum that we're feeling for these for these episodes. Very, very difficult decision had to be made. An impossible decision had to be made this episode. But before that decision was made, we did have some interesting visions given to the various standing party members, beginning with FCG. Now, it was very good. Not what I was expecting. It makes sense, too. Like, this psychic, psionic storm that just happened is evoking these different visions and memories from the cast members. Very, very cool. And I kind of want to hear what your thoughts are, specifically, I mean, on all of them, but for FCG, I'm wondering if FCG was stationed in Avalir. The only reason I say that is because in the vision, they were surrounded by many other automatons, and there was like a celebration happening. And my mind immediately went to the replenishment from the Calamity. So either they were in Avalir or they were in Kath Moira. Was that the name of their sister city?
Yeah.
They're going to? That's kind of where I'm at, but I don't
know. It definitely sounded like that kind of... it definitely sounded like one of the floating cities. And just the description of it, it didn't sound... Well, we don't know, because we don't have an exact description of Aeor in its prime. Yeah. We don't know necessarily what color it was, what it fully looked like, except for what we saw from the ruins. But it did, the description Matt gave did seem like a fairly cheery and a beautiful kind of place, which isn't my first think of Aeor, but that's also probably just because of what we know of Aeor. But I'd love to think that maybe it was Avalir or something like that. Even just, the thousands of other mechanical beings, it might be Hobbitons.
Yeah.
Like,
that's not what I was thinking.
But yeah, no, the FCG's one was great because we kind of get maybe a little bit more credence to that. It's the care and care and culling. We get like a little bit more kind of maybe lead into that because seeing FCG think of that woman that he was with, you know, this woman that he liked being with, and she liked being with him, and then, you know, she smiled and then she frowned and then she was gone. Like, maybe we have a little bit of backstory there of what FCG used to do.
And that they were supposedly successful in carrying out their programming.
Sounds like it,
Which is very sad. But would it even have any significance now? Because that was obviously, you know, centuries ago.
We don't know. That was during the Age of Arcanum, so that was also pre-Calamity. We don't know what then happened to all the automatons that were involved with that. We just know that it kind of led to a distrust in Aeor from the other cities. I mean, rightfully so, if this city's sending in essentially murder bots. Yeah. Like, you know what, maybe we don't deal with them anymore. We don't... We're not going to get it because it's, you know, it's not necessary. No. But I'd love a detailed timeline of FCG's life.
Yeah.
There's probably like a big span there just of, you know, frozen in ice or something like that. But I would love to know exactly kind of what this little Robert's been up to.
And, you know, it's also possible that FCG wasn't even like alive during the Calamity. Yeah. When they finished their... contract, you know, their assassination protocol, that could have been it for them. Then they could have like gone into like a like a semi-permanent stasis until their next assignment, and then boom, calamity happened. So they might not even have been around for it. But it would be interesting. I just want to know if they're somehow able to access those memories. Just to, again, I don't think it would it's any relevant information, but who knows? Maybe the way Matt writes these stories, maybe it is possible that this old lady that FCG was instructed to kill, maybe she did have some kind of significance back then, and maybe that leads to something now. I wouldn't put it past Matt for something like that to happen.
I remember when we were in Aeor and they freed Charlie / Devexian, and Matt was like, well, this is essentially Warforged in Exandria. Yeah. This is the equivalent of that. So if we're thinking FCG is the equivalent of like Warforged, like they are human, like they have souls, they're living creatures. I know I've talked about this before and people have called me out not knowing anything about Warforged, but they are essentially a living creature. So I think, I like the idea of maybe FCG was just an automaton, but they developed, they became more, they became closer to what we consider to be in D&D a living, thinking, rational creature. But also it is just kind of cool to know that this feature is still within them, like this build-up of energy that can cause them to cull.
I wonder, I want to know the specific mechanics of it too. Like we know it gives them advantage on stuff, but it'd be interesting to get like a full breakdown, maybe like post-campaign, like what exactly happens when that, and like all the rules that are stacked for different things to happen. That'd be cool. But that's pretty much all we got from FCG, just a very brief glimpse into their past.
We got a bit of like a man shouting at them.
Yeah.
Like the, which Matt said, short, short blonde graying hair, graying blonde hair. My first thought was like Tarry? Tarrying Darrington?
Yeah.
I was like, no, that's probably not true. Yeah, that's probably not the right connection. But no, that's, interesting. Lots of kind of, the fact that they were pulled out, those two people, I'm hoping we kind of get some more.
There's definitely more
information on them.
Yes,
at some point.
I agree.
Yeah,
likely more significance down the road. But the next was Chetney.
Chetney! I want to talk about Ashton so bad. Chetney's good too.
Chetney was very good too. It was a lot of just imagery of giving in to their animalistic nature. But what was interesting is what you were saying before is that it's directly connected to Ruidus.
Yeah, right. So it's all that
scary.
Negative. Yeah. All that negative kind of influence of Ruidus. And we don't fully know, I guess, how werewolves work in Exandria, like if they are related to Katha. I feel like they are because it's, you know, full moon, that's when the transformations happen. And that's the full moon of Katha. But the fact that they're signaling in on, oh, Ruidus is the one that is, like, you're feeling Ruidus's influence on you, like to hunt, to kill, to ruin. It's scary. It's kind of scary because we've seen, I thought we were going to come back to Chetney having lost control and like being feral or something.
I kind of thought the same thing too, actually.
So I'm kind of glad we didn't, but it also would have been pretty cool.
I don't know. I think Matt was cutting us a break with that one. Things were already looking pretty bad. I think, you know what? I'll give him this one.
FCG comes back feral.
Yeah, literally.
Chetney comes back feral. Ashton comes back catatonic. Like, like, what do we do?
It's
oh my god!
It's over. This was actually the campaign finale, folks. You just didn't know.
Oh, wow.
You had no idea. Oh, but there were a couple of name drops, likely just individuals from Chetney's past.
Yeah.
As much as Chetney, you know, is, you know, hilarious and fairly forthcoming, his past is more or less shrouded in mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew he was a toy maker. We know he's got some stuff going on in Uthodurn, but we don't know his relatives. We don't know his family. Yeah. We don't know any of that stuff. So it was just cool hearing a couple of names ringing out.
Yeah.
maybe they'll have significance again down the line if they were specifically pulled from Chetney's memory. But it'll be now even more interesting once the Apogee Solstice does, you know, arrive, if then Chetney is going to have any adverse, you know, reactions to it. Because now we know that, well, his werewolf instincts are connected to Ruidus.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
A bit on the frightening side. But next up was Ashton.
Yeah.
Ashton and their... What is going on here?
I think I was most
intrigued by Ashton's.
Yeah, I am here for Ashton's storyline. There's so many theories you could have about this, of what's happening with these people and what's happening with his family. I mean, my running kind of guess is that, you know, their parents were involved in this ritual which caused the destruction of the Hishari. Whether or not they were tampering with the elemental planes is kind of what it sounds like, because they kind of like portrayed the Hishari, the very little we know and the little bit we got from the museum was that they're almost like an anti-Hishari in the sense of like they were trying to mess around with the elements and it didn't work out for them. So it's like, you know, a tale to spook people to, like, you know, don't mess with the elements. So I'm wondering, like, if they were doing some kind of ritual to act and, like, get into the elemental plane, because it sounded like there was a portal there.
Yeah.
That went real bad. Maybe the elemental chaos, like, really fucked with them or something. But my theory revolves a lot around Ashton being an Earth Genasi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we got confirmation that Ashton's father was Elven. We didn't get any confirmation as to what race his mother was. I think it'd be kind of cool if, like, his mother wasn't even Genasi also, and that the result of his Genasi heritage was this...
Was just some crazy shit
was
happening.
Was what happened
portal,
to him,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, a
young
thinking.
Child being involved in an elemental ritual that's gone wrong suddenly becomes Genasi, which... You know, Genasis are cool like that. Stuff just happens to them.
And that is a theory that we have had, as Adam is reminding us in chat. Ashton did say he was soft once.
Yeah.
I remember when that happened, talking about that on the podcast and being like, yeah, what if Ashton wasn't always a Genasi and then something ended up happening? And so that seems like it's likely to be the case, which is super interesting because... I remember reading up a little bit, I think he's in the Discord chat, how Earth Genasi's, like, how they come to be varies. You know, you could just form, you could be related to, like, a genie or something. Like, there are multiple ways, you know, an Earth Genasi.
Yeah, it can be hereditary, it can be, like, an actual, like, community of Genasi. So, like, Dorian comes from a community of air Genasis. We can assume, or at the very least, we know that their parents are likely air Genasi because their brother was also air Genasi. They seem to come from a floating city of Genasi. But others, it could just be like, you know, the elemental chaos was at a zenith or something and it affected the birth of the child. Or, you know, someone has a run-in with, as you say, like a genie or a myriad or something. And it can affect how people... become. I think that'd be a really cool insight into this character. We have had Genasi players before, I suppose, like in EXU and in one shots, but we haven't had a long campaign Genasi before. The closest we've gotten was, I suppose, like the Gentleman, but that never really came into their character so much, the fact that they were Genasi. So I'm super excited for the story. The fact that we know there was only one survivor of this incident, and now we know that that's Ashton. I mean, we don't know. There could have been more than one survivor.
Is there anything in, like, the history books, you know, in, like, the Tal Dorei Reborn guide or, like, the Wildemount guide that hints at something like this? Because it had to have been recent. Had to have been, like, within the past decade or so.
It's in Isildur, so the guides don't really... They give a little bit of information about Isildur, but it's mainly about Vasselheim. Because we've had Wildemount and Tal Dorei, we haven't had the Isildur guide yet. And if we do, I think it'd come after a Marquette guide.
Yeah.
For sure. No, it's interesting. It was a cool vision too. And the fact that, you know, it's this thing that they've had in their brain for a while and it's just been triggered and they can now remember it.
Then I wonder then, like, if they ever end up coming across Keyleth, you know, in person or whatever, I wonder if Ashton does carry with them the mask, that, you know, that leather arm or something, if maybe he asks Keyleth about it, like, hey,
you know, what do you know about this
or these people? That would be interesting, maybe some insight there. Or even because they I think they have plans on going to the university, that one university in Eos, at some point. Maybe there's more to learn there. But oh boy, Ashton possibly being originally of elven heritage, definitely different. That is cool though. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to see more of that story and like even what it might mean. Because we know at the very least their dunamantic stuff potentially or most likely comes from the incident, where they had that place within them. But yeah, maybe if they're looking to find more about their kind of just their general heritage, that'd be really interesting.
It would. But speaking of interesting, Imogen also had a vision, a bit more lighthearted, I guess, at the start, at the very least, as it was visions of Imogen being with her mother once again, and her mother being there for her. But then Odahan facing off against Imogen. And Odahan ended up saying some very interesting things. Basically hinting at the fact that, like, they are of the blood of something.
Yeah, you know, they are a gift in their image.
Yes, a gift in their image. There, as in
there, as in multiple, more than one.
Perhaps the two forgotten gods that were hinted at. That's got it. Like that's got to be it, right?
My theory is just burning up in front of me.
But
being replaced by more theories, which is exciting. I don't know. It's hard to think of. Pre-making, I can't remember the name of what that age is called, but pre-founding gods, like, that we don't already have. Like, what domains were missed? What domains are unfilled that could link to this thing? I mean, maybe it's like a psionic god, or maybe it's like a god of like mental psychic abilities.
Again, because we had kind of talked about, like, what if these two forgotten gods were just like very powerful aberrant beings?
Aberrations
that had a strong connection to this. I feel like that's gotta be it.
I like that too. I like the idea that it's like, you know, like an elder, not an elder brain, that's not the word I'm going for, but like an elder, like beholder or something like that, an elder kind of beholder god essentially, or like mind flayer god or something, like something along those lines, something aberrant. I'm with you. I think that's a great idea. But creepy too.
But then in this vision, Imogen definitely defying the wishes of Odahan and blasting her away in the vision, and so I'm assuming in real life as well, as when Imogen finally came to, Odahan was nowhere to be seen. The scene, the situation was kind of at a resting point, the storm subsiding slightly. But then the worries and the trials and tribulations really began as, Fern and Orym lay slain and Laudna on death's door, having to roll that final death saving throw. And well, we all know exactly how that went.
Natural
one.
Oh my
how
god.
Tragic.
What? The dice.
How tragic. Because we talked a lot about what's the worst case scenario. We talked about that last week. I talked about it yesterday during my stream. It's like part of the worst case scenario is Laudna dying. Because then someone for sure is perma dying. Without a doubt, someone for sure is dying. Because they only have enough components for two resurrections. So as soon as Marisha fails that, I don't know if the rest of the cast kind of realized that. Maybe some of them did. But me, definitely, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, shit. Well,
yeah,
we are now on track for the worst case scenario happening. Well,
wasn't good.
It was not good. It was not good. No.
But no, but it made sense. And I want to point out, I really loved Sam's reasoning for avoiding metagaming. I thought that was a really good conversation.
I really
it was very much
too.
Like, would I know that Fern has this?
Yeah.
Because my first thought is to get Aurum up. But if I know, like, you know, playing it out, essentially talking about what their characters actually know of each other. So I liked that conversation because it was, I feel like, had there been any kind of doubt of if Fern could revive someone and FCG had gone to Aurum, people would have been unhappy.
Oh, yeah.
But it would have made sense in that aspect of the story. Yes. But it did make sense in this version for FCG to know that Fern has that capability. So I liked that it was just, you know, the conversation was had. It wasn't just a quiet thought he had to himself. I think that's important to kind of discuss the metagaming aspect of it.
I really liked that as well. And if it had gone any other way, then we would have had two deaths. So they would not have been able to revive Fern.
Yeah. Yeah. We could have potentially had three deaths if the we got close.
Yeah, that's true. We got very right close. On the cusp. Right on the cusp of 10. 10.
We should point out, too, because before this, we had an Laudna vision as well, because Laudna was still with us when that psychic wave went out, so she had a vision, too. She
that
had
correct.
Delilah, like, the vision of being in Whitestone at the dinner, at the table, Delilah essentially, like, raging in her brain of, like, I will endure, I will, I cannot die. Like, it's like, all right, love, like, chill out a bit.
Well, slow down. Slow down a bit.
Yeah.
Was speaking of someone.
Did she say? She said
she mentioned she didn't. Well, she said she was doing.
I am of his blood.
Yeah.
I will endure. My will is unrelenting. You are my vessel in life, unlife, and beyond. I will endure. Ooh.
I am
like,
of his blood. Are we?
Is that Vecna?
Thinking Vecna?
Yeah, it has to be right.
I would
but
think
blood
so.
Is so. Empirical as well. I don't think saying you're of his blood though would be weird in this instance, I think, relating to your husband. But I think it's Vecna. I think I'm of his blood, I'm undying. I will endure, like, you're my vessel in this life, in unlife and forever. Ooh. Yeah. She's hard to get rid of, Delilah Briarwood. I wonder if we'll ever truly be rid of her.
Still then trying to bring Vecna back or something?
But that was our theory, though, that, like, Delilah was, like, what's the word? Like, bound to Laudna.
Yeah.
But she's still around outside of Laudna. Imogen sent a message to her.
Yeah.
She sent a sending to her and made contact after Laudna had died. So there's something else going on there with I mean, obviously, we know Laudna's a hollow one. There's all kinds of undeath happening around here. But it means that Delilah's consciousness is somewhere. Not
is
just in Laudna.
A hidden phylactery somewhere with a piece of her soul chilling.
Yeah. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
But she's like I said, she's hard to get rid of.
We have not seen the last of Delilah or Laudna, as we will discuss that again once we get to it. But they do end up reviving Fern first, thankfully, and they had that brief little vision of Fern, looking back, like, well, I don't know, like, what else is here?
Her afterlife sounds awful.
Yeah, that did not sound good.
Is that just like that a Feywild kind of afterlife? Like, that's maybe scary. That's hellish almost.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go there.
Nah.
Unless that's like the dark fern stuff that has been hinted at.
Ooh, perhaps. I don't like it.
Like the corruption, because, you know, her hand is corrupted because she put on that crown. So maybe like her soul is now tainted or something.
Ooh, I don't like it.
Yeah. Not,
that's going to make it even worse if Fern ever actually dies. Yeah. I think that's where she goes.
Yep. But luckily for Fern, she doesn't have to deal with that now. She accepted.
She's alive.
Yeah. She accepted the hand of FCG and was brought back once again and immediately told, also, Orym's dead and you have 30 seconds to, you have 30 seconds to revive him. But then as that's happening, Imogen realizes that Laudna's gone. And tries to rush over there, you know, unbury her body, Ashton accompanying her to try to help. And then we have the decision. The bodies are brought together. It's in Fern's hands to decide. It's like it's impossible. You can't make that decision. It's actually impossible. Well,
yes, I feel like as a player, you can't make that decision.
Yeah.
I feel like Fern probably had a choice, like had a pick. But that was amazing, that whole conversation. One, stressful, because they kept talking. I know. Like, Matt's going to tick down rounds if they keep talking. But no, it was stressful because they were all very quite upset, I think, during this of like, how do we choose? We can't possibly choose. And whether or not someone has a preference or not, the choice is still, you know, a difficult choice.
Yeah.
But then Fern's like saying, like, should we vote on it? Like, votes for
Laura? Like, oh my God. Let's raise hands and vote. That was so good. But
I loved the inclusion of the Changebringer coin.
Yes.
That's an exciting development.
I really liked that. And I wonder if Matt is going to use that at some point.
I want to know, because we didn't see the result of the flip, and I'm not suggesting that she could have, but we don't know. So I'm not suggesting anything out there, whether or not Fern lied about the roll, the flip, or anything like that. I would love for either way Matt to like know, to find out what it is, because imagine if she's using the Changebringer coin to make a decision. You know, luck is all of Andra's deal, like, you know, it's like leave it to the fate sort of thing. Mm-hmm. She flips a coin and then changes the decision based on that. Like, I'd love to see if there's any kind of implications there for Evandra. It might also just fall straight under Evandra anyway. She's like, yes, cool, that's, you know, luck in itself anyway.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I feel like their reasonings were, it's so dodgy. It's like kind of, you know, who do we vote to kick off the boat sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's such an ugly kind of conversation you've got to have. But I did like their things of, well, Lorna's been dead before.
Yeah.
There's a chance she could come back. But then
that's where I think the decision is made the smallest bit easier, because that does make sense. And a lot of the other, like, even Imogen said that. Like, she has been brought back before. It's possible it could happen again. And I do think, regardless of what the coin was going to say, I do think Fern would have chosen Orym.
Yeah.
Regardless.
I agree.
I think it makes the most sense from Fern's perspective. But also just in the general party, because again, there is potential that Laudna comes back.
Yeah.
Especially because they know Delilah is still connected to her.
Yeah. Delilah is still connected to her. Delilah has her own plans. Mm-hmm. They could maybe, like, and I know Imogen, I don't know if this was before or after the ritual for Orym, but I know Imogen did connect to Delilah and said, like, bring her back. And she's like, I can't.
I can't, yeah. I would ask the same thing of you, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So we get a sense that, you know, yeah, Delilah is kind of bound and restricted in her current state. But it still doesn't mean that it's an impossibility later down the line that Lorna can be brought back. But we got we got Orym's resurrection.
We did get Orym.
And that might be one of the most beautiful resurrections. Oh, like, for one, we talked about how we weren't sure if Matt was going to do resurrections rituals. But these little one-on-one ones were quite sweet. But Fern's one was really heartbreaking. Like you know, crying and asking him to come back because it's getting scary and they need him. And then just add on to that everything that Orym saw.
Oh, gosh. Embrace. Oh, it was so beautiful.
Yeah, it was so really sad. Lovely. It was so well done by Matt and Liam.
Yeah.
I
think, as like sad as it was for Orym, I think it's something he needed to then still go on to finish what he needed.
100%.
What needs to be done.
100%.
Giving him confirmation that, you know, Will is still there. Will is still watching over him, and so is Derek. And definitely Orym needed that, given everything that's happened.
It was a little, it was reminiscent, I feel, a little bit, and this is like EXQ Calamity spoilers, so if you haven't seen it, but it was reminiscent, I felt, of Xerxes and Evandrin in the tree, and saying, like, you know, we're here, like, come find us, eventually, like, one day come find us sort of thing, and yeah, it felt very sweet, and I agree, I think it was kind of what Orym needed. If it had been maybe, like, you know, his vision was of Zephra and Will wasn't there, but he knew Will was somewhere out there, he might have gone. Like, he might have gone looking for him. But the fact that Will was there to say, like, it's okay, like, come back to me later. I'm guessing there were some conversations behind the table of, like, you know, what would Orym be thinking? Like, what would cause Orym to stay? What would cause Orym to come back? That type of conversation. Which is just good, you know, that's just good table manners. I'm glad he came back. I was worried, one of my biggest concerns was that they were going to revivify Orym and Orym would decide to stay, which is, you know, their choice. Yeah. But I was concerned that that was going to happen when they had chosen to revivify Orym and not Lorna. I feel like at that point you have to come back.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like, I can only imagine the vitriol. But still their choice to make. But I was like, oh no, please come back.
Don't do this to us, Liam. We love sadness, Liam. I know you like sadness, but no, that's too much. That's too much.
Yeah.
Need too much for us to handle.
But it was beautiful. They came back and they're then just stuck there with Lorna gone and the block around them completely destroyed. Like,
yeah, we can't forget that. Like, everything is gone around here. It's not looking good. It's not looking good. And the Paragons call hot on their heels. They don't have much time to run away back to Imahara Joe's. But they do collect themselves as best as they can. And, sprint their way through the streets trying to lay low until they finally arrive to get a moment of respite, as this has been one wild day. You know, this was still the same day that FCG you know, went haywire. This is still that day.
God,
not good. It's still pretty early in the day too. Like, it's not that late in the day. This still got so much more.
Yeah.
But thankfully Imahara Joe,
what a bro.
God's bless that man.
What a bro.
seriously. Giving them a place to hide out in that little, you know, storage room. Where then they had a very, very interesting conversation with Armand Treshy, who eventually, after a bit of, you know, warming up, if you will, kind of spilled the beans on his entire operation and what he's been doing, what his plans were, and how things have gone so wrong. Because it seems like he was just trying to get more power. He was just trying to get a better place, better standing in the, you know, the hierarchy of Drusar.
Which if we think right back to the Drusar chapters, I think that was one of our theories. And it was a popular theory, I think. So getting the Paragon's call in, creating creating mischief in the city, for lack of a better word, to get the Paragons called in, to have essentially a sitting army within Drusar under the control of these people. And yeah, like if that makes sense. It's like, cool, cool plan, bro. Like, still treason.
Yeah, still.
It was nice to have that conversation, but I liked the Belzell's kind of indignation of like, you went to Ira for this? Like, what the hell's wrong with you? They've gone to Ira for things as well. Like, Ira's kind of like, everyone that works with Ira judges everyone else that works with Ira. Like, you're working with Ira? I mean, I know I'm working with Ira, but why are you working with Ira? I love Ira.
And now I just want to know how far back does Ira go? How many things has Ira been involved with that have just led to just ridiculousness? Because I remember like the very first theories that we had, or at least that I had, when Ira was first introduced, we're like, oh, Ira, Somnovum? Oh, is there a connection here?
I feel like Ira's truthful most of the time. So I think Ira I was just chilling in the Feywild and then Ruida started appearing and I was like, gotta do something about that. I trust Ira in that sense of they're not like, you know, a scheming liar. They're just, you know, withholding stuff. So maybe they're just, you know, a fucker that just lived in the Feywild for a bit.
They are who they are and they fucking own that shit.
Exactly. People like Ira.
We respect that. We respect that here.
Yeah.
They know what they do.
But it was good to get these answers from Treshi, like to get some actual confirmation of what was happening. Learning that they were probably, they're still lower down on the chain than we need them to be.
Yeah.
Because really it's Otahan and probably Ludinus are the big names here that are running whatever this Apogee Solstice bullshit with Ruidus is going to be.
Yeah,
it's them.
There was even like a deeper deal that was going on that Armand had made of like these different trade routes and stuff, smuggling these Dunamantic potions, and as we later found out, even Residuum. And we got a bit of that information in Exandria Unlimited with the Crown Keepers, where they also found crates of Residuum.
Interesting.
And Orym also kind of realized then that this shouldn't be here. Like, they run a tight ship up in Whitestone. It's weird that all this Residuum is going to Whitestone.
We have to go to Whitestone.
Yeah, so we know that Residuum is used in powerful magics and such.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be that the reason they're smuggling all of this stuff out is because of what Ludinus is planning to do for the Apogee Solstice? Like, what if they are attempting an ascension and they are gathering as much Residuum as they can? I would imagine you would need a lot of magical power and Residuum to unleash gods, forgotten gods, from a prison. So again, I'm assuming that the reason for all this Residuum is for the Apogee Solstice and whatever plans surround that with all these Ruidus-born people in Otahan.
Yeah.
So, it's not good. Not good.
It's so good, though. But it's so good.
But then at the same time, on the flip side.
It's so interesting. I just want to see. I just want to know what's happening.
Pretty good.
It's so concerning. I love it.
But you know what else is good? They have, like, 8 bottles of this, of possibility potions.
Holy shit. I mean, we know that it's refined, but which makes sense. If it's refined, it's going to be more powerful. But the fact that it's more powerful than even just looking into the Luxon, like they get essentially what they got from the Luxon, but twice.
That's actually so crazy.
It is like, limited, of course, though. It's not like once a day. Mm-hmm. They've only got 8 uses of it. But it's essentially like, you know, 2 weeks of Luxon use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
that is some ridiculous stuff. But then I wonder if those potions and the Dunamancy stuff is connected in any way to like the Residuum and all of this Ruidusborn stuff.
Or maybe
it's just a moneymaker.
Maybe they're building like a giant tractor beam to pull Ruidus in with Dunamantic magic. Use the it's just one big catapult spell.
Could be. Instead of a rocket ship to Ruidus, they're building a catapult.
Yes.
I can see that.
I'm on board.
I can see that.
I like this thing.
Sure. Well, we'll go with that. Yeah. We'll go We'll go with it. That'll be our writing theory up until the apogee solstice.
But it is kind of, it's just so intriguing whatever they're doing. Like Ludinus being involved, Ojahan being this incredibly like scary individual. Mm-hmm. Them eventually reaching out to Estros and saying Ojahan's on the way. Like they didn't even ask, do you know who Ojahan is? No. That like we can presume that Estros knows who Ojahan is, at least from a historical perspective. But then like Estros just going like, ha, okay, cool. Like I'm gonna get ready. Is concerning. They're big and scary.
They are big and terrifying. But speaking of Estros, and some other names that were mentioned, in terms of resurrecting Laudna, the Lord and Lady of Whitestone were mentioned as potentially being able to do so, but then also Keyleth is someone Orym brought up. But then I don't really like the idea of going to Keyleth or, you know, Percy and Vex'ahlia.
Yeah.
It's because I feel like
it's tricky.
This is a cop-out, kind of.
Well, yeah, it's very tricky because, and I'm trying to stay balanced on here, but it's very much like it could set a precedence of, you know, going to the most powerful NPC you know.
Yeah.
And it's not to suggest they're just finding, you know, an Archdruid. There is established connections with this character. So it does narratively make sense. That being said, it is also... All right, let's talk about all the pros. It narratively makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's been established. We know Orym has this connection. We know that Keyleth has the ability to do it. Another pro would be perhaps this, like Matt did say, you know, when a character goes down, we're not thinking as a table. We're not going to think about the mechanics of it. We're going to think what's best for the player.
Yeah.
So if Marisha and the players are like, hey, no, I do want Laudna to stick around, then they're going to find a way to bring her back. And that's fine. That's you can play D&D however the fuck you want.
Exactly.
So if that's the way they go, that's fine. The cons, I guess, in this sense, is it can set a dangerous precedence for going to Keyleth whenever something goes bad, which they haven't done yet. And that was always a big fear, I think, a few people had, which is like, well, they'll just call Keyleth anytime something bad goes, or why don't they just call Vox Machina to come in and solve all their problems? I don't think it would set that precedence, but it's something to be aware of, which I'm sure they are. And the other thing is, like, as you say, it's kind of a little bit like, if we're then looking at sort of, oh, well, you know, the way death works in D&D, it's exciting to have to make a new character and the consequences of your actions have led to a character death. You've got to kind of own up to that. But I think it all just boils down to it's their table. They're going to play how they want.
Sure.
And yeah, and it's going to make a good story anyway. Like if we just... Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to stay balanced because unlike you, I kind of feel like I don't want them to necessarily just go to Keyleth and get it done. But at the same time, I want to respect that. No, if they want to do that, just let them do it.
And I could see an interesting, again, narrative piece coming out of this because as Sora Guy is saying in chat, I think the moment anyone from Vox Machina hears about her connection to Delilah, they would refuse.
That's the other thing too. Like, I think they're putting a lot of faith in the fact that Keyleth can do this, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that comes clear that this is a vessel for Delilah Briarwood, I think that's going to be a hard no.
A hard no, and maybe even just the complete obliteration of Laudna's.
It might backfire really poorly.
Yeah.
I also saw a few people in, I think it might have been the Reddit thread, discussing about how maybe Keyleth doesn't do resurrections because we know that Will and Derry did die, but Orym did mention that, like, because I think it was Imogen asked him, does she do this sort of thing? He goes, usually, or like, usually it works. So we don't necessarily know what happened after the events of the attack. It could be that, you know, she tried to... I'm going to have to close that door. It keeps slamming. She tried to resurrect Will and Derek or anything along those lines, and maybe just the ritual didn't work. I'm going to have to go close this door because it keeps slamming.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
It's driving me insane.
No problem, you're good. I can vamp for a few seconds. No, it is a good point, because we obviously know how important Delilah was to Vox Machina's story and all the destruction Delilah caused there. So I really don't see a world in which Keyleth would want to have anything to do with even remotely bringing Delilah back in, you know, in the sense of, you know, resurrecting Laudna. Laudna is Delilah's vessel, and then everything that comes with that. Keyleth is refusing. Maybe they can convince Keyleth to try to sever that connection, so then at least Delilah is back. Or not Delilah, sorry, so at least Laudna is back, but I don't know. I don't know about all that. Bit tough.
Okay.
But we also have to consider, like, the resurrection spell that we're looking at.
Ooh.
Would it be, like, Rey's dead at this point? Because Gentle Repose was cast on Laudna, so they have 10 days.
Yeah, that was interesting, too.
I believe.
That, yeah, 10 days. 10 days to... Yeah, because Rey's dead, I think, is within an hour? No. Let's look it up. Let's look at D&D Beyond.
Let's look... We know D&D. We're so good at playing this.
Okay. Ray's dead.
Gentle Repose.
Yeah, you do Gentle Repose, I'll do Ray's dead.
You touch a corpse or other remains, radiation of the target is protected from decay and can't become undead. Interesting.
Here we go.
The spell also effectively extends the time limit on raising the target from the dead, since days spent under the influence of the spell don't count against the time limit of spells such as Raise Dead. Gotcha.
Yes.
10 days.
10 days, yeah. And so that's the length of time that you can use for Raise Dead. It's dead for no longer than 10 days. But you can keep recasting Gentle Repose.
Yeah.
You can kind of keep it going. But I want to talk about that situation that they were in when they cast it, and there was a seeming effect that took hold of the body. Something that was like, he said you cut a process off at the pass, sort of thing. Like you stop something from happening. And I'm like, what was happening? Was Delilah doing something here? Was Delilah beginning a process of bringing her back to life, like as an actual undead creature? Because the Hollow One, they register as undead, but they are not undead. They are still humanoid. They are still a creature.
Yes.
But we also don't know. It's going to be really cool because it's Matt's subclass, or like subrace. He gets to decide kind of how these resurrections work with a Hollow One. Because the aspect of a Hollow One's soul is very weird. Like, they don't necessarily have their soul, but it doesn't mean their soul doesn't exist. It's tricky. And so Raise Dead and a lot of those necromancy kind of spells are very much about, you know, returning the soul to the body. So I don't see how it's not going to work, I guess, if that makes sense. Raise Dead's not that hard a spell. It's like only fifth level. But we could be looking at, if they go to Keyleth, she ignores everything about Delilah Briarwood. She's like, yeah, I got this. We could have True Resurrection on our hands. We could have... Well, that's very expensive. I know. I'm not sure Keyleth would spend that much money.
Oh, no.
But we've got a lot of options here. I think if we're going down the path of, yes, let's find a way to bring Laudna back, there's plenty of options they've got. And it's going to be exciting and interesting just based on who Laudna is and who Laudna deals with. So I'm excited for it. I think that's going to be my main takeaway from it is, while I love, I sound like such a dick, while I love character deaths and new characters coming in, I love Laudna and I want more from her as well.
That's true. And to that point, Laudna's character in particular makes things very interesting because of all the different avenues they can go with it. The different people that can go for resurrections and what that means because of Delilah's connection. Like, Delilah is what makes this so tricky, so difficult. Because, yes, we want Laudna back, but no, we don't want Delilah back. I mean, I want Delilah back for, you know, storytelling perspective and stuff. 100%. But, you know, in world, no, you don't want Delilah to come back. So I think if they did go to Keyleth and maybe it was brought up that Delilah is connected to Laudna, I think there would be an attempt or trying to figure out how to sever that connection and break that tie. If that's even possible, it might not be. Like, Laudna might be just directly tied to Delilah's essence, and there's no way to get rid of one without getting rid of the other.
Unless you do True Resurrection. Adam's just suggested that, like, potentially that could sever the connection, which is kind of interesting to think about. I also want to point out, I think it was Danielle Danielle Lee said, can Cindy go across planes? It can. It can go anywhere. It can go across planes. It can go across universe. There is a percentage chance that it doesn't work. So whether or not Matt didn't roll or get or image roll, that could have just been a, you know, a mistake. Yeah. But yeah, there's like a 5% chance it doesn't work if you send it from outside your current plane. But yeah, it goes everywhere. It's a badass spell.
Oh yeah.
Sending.
Definitely want to have a caster in your party just for sending purposes. They are just a sending bot. They use all their spell slots for sending.
Yeah.
That's going to be my next D&D character.
Ah, like a sending bot. The mailman. Email.
Yep. That's pretty much
elf
what it
mail.
Is. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. But speaking back on Estros did say he was going to maybe try to pull some strings and see if they can work something out for Laudna. I don't know how likely it'll end up being.
Yeah. We don't know. There's no, like, we haven't learnt yet of any major temple or anything in Drusa, have we? Because none of our characters are religious, I guess, in any sense of the way. So we've not really had much kind of temple or any kind of, any of that this campaign so far. So it's interesting. I'm not sure who they might reach out to.
I don't know. That is also up in the air. But with all of this, like, traumatic stuff that's happened and the seemingly very powerful nature of Imogen, Jenny brought up a good point when they're speaking of, like, the run Imogen run lines that Imogen keeps hearing in her dreams. Like, Jenny being like, what if she's telling, like, you to, like, to run away from, like, everyone else because of how dangerous you are. And I'm starting to wonder how much is this going to shake up the dynamic of the group? Obviously, it's going to shake it up. But to what extent? Like, does Imogen leave? Does Imogen stick around at least to see if Laudna comes back so she can, I don't know, apologize?
I don't know.
Or whatever. But
it's
going to take
really
a lot
get
to keep this group together after all.
Yeah, we didn't really get, it's still so fresh. Like, they've literally just gotten out of the city. So we don't know. We've got travel time back to Drusar now. We might have lovely travel conversations.
I hope so.
Coming
I
up.
Hope so. They need it.
But it was very much, we got a little bit of, I mean, it's instant grief sort of thing for Imogen. We got a bit of that, but then she had to kind of come back to the fold to have the conversations, to talk to Treshy, to be involved with the group in escaping. So we haven't really had a second yet to stop and think, oh, what does this actually mean? Like, what's happened to you? They had a little bit of a conversation, like saying, how do you feel? Do you feel different? Things like that. But they haven't had a proper think of, what does this actually mean long term for you? Because she still has all the marks, doesn't she? Like, they didn't go away, I don't think.
The glowing kind of went away. Obviously. But I think Matt was saying that the lightning bolts on her arms have grown a bit more.
So.
And worse.
Yeah, and they're going back to Drusar. I want them to go to Yeos, like, so badly, because I feel like they're going
to
get there.
They drop off on Treshy, they maybe get Laudna resurrected, and they gotta get going. They gotta go.
Man.
They have absolutely no time at all to waste.
They still need a friendly elf wizard to help them around. Like, they don't have their elf wizard friend yet.
Nope.
I think maybe they get a half elf druid to help them out.
What's his name? Yusa. Yusa just appears out of nowhere.
Yusa still has to turn up.
Yeah. We know it's coming.
Last time we asked for Yusa, though, we got Ludinus, so maybe we should.
Need to slow down. Maybe we're the ones that need to slow down. But another really fun moment, or I guess, you know, I use fun loosely, was when the Paragon's Call members arrived at Imahara Joe's house, and there was that, you know, being sneaky under the floorboards scene.
Did you notice that one of those characters was, like, intently kind of sniffing the air and, like...
Yeah.
It made Matt played it as if they were, like, you know, smelling and trying to sense things. I'm wondering if that was a werewolf. Like...
Maybe.
And maybe they just rolled poorly. But yeah, he made mention of, like, you hear a growl from upstairs, which kind of just could be just some grumbling, but he said growl, and then we had one of them like sniffing, and then he rolled what I assumed to be a perception check. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like the idea that that was one of the werewolves. It's...
Oh yeah. Yeah. Linus, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the werewolves. Yeah.
Huh. Neat. Which is like still concerning that the Paragon Skull have werewolves in their clan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good.
Oh my god.
That's not good. Ira, what have you done? Ira literally does not care. They are just running around doing whatever the frick they want. But Imogen was able to successfully contact their airship, and we have one of my favorite NPCs coming back now. The captain of the airship is going to be really fun to have them back. It'll be a breath of fresh air. Having that character come back. Although things are still going to be very somber and very sad.
Still terrible.
But at least our comic relief is back while they're in the air. We will have to break the tension.
It is nice though, because we know we're going into travel episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, this is what we like. This is the bread and butter of Critical Role, travel episode conversations and...
Things super like traumatic, angsty fueled situation followed by travel episodes of one-on-one conversations and going through
analysis it. Analysis and discussion. Yep. Let's go. Yep.
Gonna be great.
Gonna be great. It'll be good.
They hightailed it out of there as soon as that arrived.
That was exciting. That was actually pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But I love the excitement of an airship arriving. How it brings, wide eyes.
So we've got one episode next week, and then the week after is the break.
Yes. Yep.
So we're
approaching the break once again.
Could we imagine possibly a cliffhanger at the end of next week's episode?
I feel like this time there might not be.
Mm.
Because it seems like we're going down the slope right now in terms of excitement and things happening. So I think next week might just be travel, some conversations being had. Maybe they do arrive to Drusar and they meet up with Esteros and tie up all the loose ends there with bringing in Treshi. And then I think it could end with maybe Esteros being like, oh yes, and now here's my contact for the resurrection. You can go meet
they're
with
in Eos!
Yeah, they're in Eos. Look at that. I can actually see Matt. Doing something like that to just get them moving towards that direction. But I think the episode will likely end with them deciding what to do next and maybe embarking on their trip to Eos. I actually don't think they're... I think this is like an end of an arc is what they're approaching. Like next episode is like the end of the arc. Well, I guess this episode could have been that, but...
I saw a thing on Twitter and it was saying that if they don't revive Lordna next week and Marisha doesn't introduce a new PC, it'll be the first episode of Critical Role that she has never been on. Like, never at the table. She's been in every single episode consistently.
Dang. Has she even missed one if she was, like, sick or anything?
No, she's been at the table every single episode.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So that's, like... That'd be pretty sad if she's not at the table. Pre-show ads. Yeah, okay, well, I'm not counting pre-show ads. get out of here, Adam.
Man.
Please don't leave, Adam.
I feel like she won't show up then because there is the potential that Lordna comes back. So while she may have like a backup PC just in case, I don't think they'll introduce that character if the potential for
it'd be a very... Well, you know, we can trust them to do it well, but it'd be a very quick insert. Like,
it would be, especially since, you know, they had the issues with you that came up.
Yeah, so. And like, how ready is this party going to be to accepting like a new person for a short period of time?
Not very. So I could see then maybe it wouldn't be a permanent addition, just so Mercer can keep playing. I wouldn't put it past them to have Mercia act as, like, maybe a guide for them when they get to Eos or something. I'm not sure,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that could happen. I'm just seeing, why would you put this into the world? But also, I love you, Joseph, saying, betting that Odahan had teleported to Drusar and will have an interaction with Estros before the party's return.
Oh, no.
Imagine if they get there and Estros is dead!
Maybe that'll be the cliffhanger.
Oh,
or they enter the estate,
cool.
Or like they knock on the estate door and Evelyn doesn't answer.
You know what? I think it would be even cooler if they get there and, you know, it's a bloodbath, like it's absolute destruction, and it's like he has been obliterated, he's been destroyed, but he's just faked his own death and he's on the run. Estros would be the type to fake his own death.
He actually would. We love him for
Could
that.
Could you imagine? Oh, free skyship, says Alex. Oh,
that's
my
how,
God.
Hey, that's how they get it. We had the pirate arc in campaign 2, and now we have the sky pirate arc for this one, where they commandeer a skyship, and now they are free to go wherever they want.
Mm.
They can go straight to Whitestone. Good luck, man.
Yeah, let's go. I do want one other thing just before we finish up too, because Matt has said pretty much that Vox Machina are NPCs now. Like, if they return, they're NPCs. I don't see, although it could be fun, I don't see Marisha turning up at the table and playing Keyleth. But Felicia just said, what if she like turns up and plays Bo? That'd be kind of cool. I could see them maybe integrating. Mighty Nine would be easier to integrate than Vox Machina at this point, because Vox Machina are like holier than thou in the world at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, but we do have avenues in which the other PCs could come into the story, because obviously with the Residuum stuff that's going on in Whitestone, that is a door for Percy and Vex to walk through. And then obviously the connections with Ludinus is a way for Caleb and Bo to come into.
Yeah.
So there are feasible, you know, routes that they could take that could lead to seeing, you know, previous characters from other campaigns. So I want to see it. I think at this point, I kind of want to see it.
Fuck it, right?
Yeah, all bets are off. All bets are off. Yeah. Don't expect anything. I'm excited. I'm excited. The end of an arc into a new one, and I hope to God they're going to Eos finally. Please,
let's go.
Please, fingers crossed.
That's what we said about Aeol. That's what we said about Isle Cross in campaign 2, and that didn't end well.
No. maybe
they have to be going to Eos next. Surely.
Surely they go to Eos next, and there's
no
sound
next. Travelocon next episode.
Next episode, they are in Eos. Literally, they are there. Yeah. They're not even going back to Estros. They're skipping that shit.
Yeah, and Bo and Yusa are there, and
and Vandrin is having a cookout.
We finally see Vandrin.
We finally see it. Yep.
We finally learned what happened to Vandrin.
That's
a jerk. I don't want chat to go off of me.
Ride or die. I'm ride or die there. But I suppose with all that being said, is there anything else we wish to talk about with this episode? I kind of couple last night's episode and last week's episode together as like some of the best, you know, Critical Role episodes that we've had.
Yeah.
Very well played by all sides. Very well handled by Matt. It is
good DMing.
Extremely difficult to run something like that. I can't imagine having to do that, especially with like the audience that they have and all that stuff. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure that rides in that. But then again, at the end of the day, it's their game. They're going to play how they want. And we fully respect that here. So
it's
very fun.
Very good. There's so many questions still from this episode. Yeah. Like, I agree. Excellent DMing. I just want to know more. I want to know more about Ruidus. I want to know more about the psionics. Just all of it. They popped into the battlefield. Like, where were they?
You gotta get there.
Exciting.
All that and more next week. But with that being said, that is going to do it for us here. As always, thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you to everyone who tuned in live in the chat. Thank you to everyone who's going to be watching this on the YouTube upload or the podcast format for Spotify, Anchor, and wherever else it may find itself. Thank you all so much for coming out and showing your support. If you are looking to support us further, be sure to follow us on Twitter. That is going to be at WhatTheSheepPod on Twitter. We post updates on when we go live, so be sure to check that out if you're interested. Also, be sure to check out our website, WhatTheSheepPod.com. WhatTheSheepPodcast.com. I know the name of our own website.
WhatTheSheepPod.com.
WhatTheSheepPod.com has all of our socials, all of our episodes, all of the various places that our podcast is located. Be sure to check that out if you want to show a bit more support. So I appreciate you all nonetheless. And as always, don't forget to love each other. Spread the love to everyone you meet, everyone you see. The world needs more love in it, so make sure you're spreading that shit around, that good shit. But most importantly, don't forget to love yourself. So make sure you're taking care of yourself. Drink some water, eat some food, get plenty of rest. I'm proud of you, and thank you for being here. And so, everyone, with all of that being said, I hope you all have an absolutely wonderful rest of your morning, day, evening, wherever you may be on this glorious earth. And we'll see you all very soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.